Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we have news about a lawsuit against Lemon Grove over obstruction of public records, a grocery worker's strike looming, and a bail bondsman shot in El Cajon. We'll also have tips on how to avoid housing discrimination, why Santee invoked eminent domain, and how you can help senior gleaners pick produce to help people in need. Plus, we'll profile Campo Farm Animal Rescues. We'll bring you some top national news stories from Public News Service, and in honor of La Mesa's 110th anniversary, we'll be re-airing our special presentation of Centennial Spirits, Bringing Local History to Life. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Attorney Corey Briggs has filed a lawsuit on behalf of the nonprofit Project for Open Government against the City of Lemon Grove. The suit alleges that the city acted illegally in failing to respond to multiple public records requests related to the city's proposed censure and disciplinary actions towards Councilmember Leanna LeBaron. The city also denied Briggs access to inspect public records when he came to City Hall in person the day before the censure hearing, and the city has still failed to turn over records weeks later. The suit seeks a court order requiring the city to fully comply with the California Public Records Act, California Constitution, and other laws by disclosing all records requested. Briggs also seeks injunctive relief to inspect and copy all disclosable public records, as well as attorney fees and legal expenses. His records requests were sent to the city clerk, Audrey Malone, with copies to the mayor and council members. The city has accused LeBaron of disruptive actions and driving away staff members. It considered a censure motion, but ultimately that was tabled by the city council, though it could be revisited later. Briggs first sought records, including any claims against the city over LeBaron, any staff positions unfilled since December 2020, any records documenting negative opinions about the city voiced by employees, tapes of public meetings, criticisms received by council members about LeBaron outside of public meetings, and more. The attorney subsequently sought various other records related to the dispute between the city and LeBaron, including the city's claims that she harassed staff. Attorney Briggs contends that city actions barring LeBaron from City Hall, including locking her out of the conference room, should have been agendized and improperly denied her a safe place to meet with constituents. Briggs did notify the city of his intent to sue if the records were not provided, but the city still failed to provide any records, and now taxpayers will have to pay to defend the city in the lawsuit. East County Magazine put in a similar, though not identical, records request, seeking documentation of the city's serious allegations against LeBaron, especially those regarding treatment of staff. The city initially claimed it would need 10 days to redact any personal information, but failed to provide any responses even beyond the 10 days. Not even when a reminder email was sent by East County Magazine advising the city that it was in violation of state law by not disclosing those records. Lemon Grove's motto is Best Climate on Earth, but it's clear that when it comes to disclosure of public records, a lot more sunshine is needed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
United Food and Commercial Workers locals throughout California, representing over 47,000 frontline food workers at Ralph's, Albertsons, Vons, and Pavilions, have voted to authorize union leaders to call for unfair labor practice strikes if the grocery chains do not negotiate a new contract soon. The union's contract expired March 6th, and so far, negotiations have stalled. They will resume March 30th with UFCW and the grocery chains. No dates have been set yet for a strike. The UFCW, in a press release from the seven locals, states, California's essential grocery workers made their voices heard with an overwhelming vote to stand together against the repeated and egregious unfair labor practices that Ralph's and Albertsons / Vons / Pavilions have engaged in. The labor group's release continues. Through the past 2 years of the pandemic, it was the hard work and sacrifice of our members that helped these same companies earn billions in profits. Kroger's, which owns and operates Albertsons, Vons, Ralph's, and Pavilion, had its operating profit nearly double during the pandemic, reaching $4.3 billion in profits last year. UFCW Local 135 member Patty Figueroa, a bakery clerk at Albertsons in Lemon Grove, says she voted for the strike because she is struggling. Every day is a lot of hard work, and it's barely enough money to pay bills, she states, adding, I don't want to live paycheck to paycheck. These companies are making a lot of profits off of our hard work, and they violate our rights. They need to do better for us. The Los Angeles Times reports that at least one chain, Ralph's, has begun hiring temporary workers in anticipation of labor walkouts. In a statement, the company indicated its stores will remain open. No one wins in a strike. Not our associates, not our company, not our communities, and not the union, the Ralph's statement indicates. Ralph's has also claimed the union's demands could lead to sharp rises in grocery prices. The seven UFCW locals have filed unfair labor practice charges against the grocery chains with the National Labor Relations Board, claiming these employers have undermined contract negotiations and workers' rights to representation in violation of federal labor law. The specific charges against Ralph's and Albertsons, Vons, and Pavilions include refusing to implement wage increases as required by contracts and giving workers small, token bonuses instead of bargaining for wage raises per the negotiations process. The union claims this led to many workers feeling intimidated into accepting a bonus rather than a permanent wage increase. The union's complaint also objects to Ralph's outsourcing food preparation work to ghost kitchens run by non-union outside companies. In addition, the union asserts that Albertsons, Vons, and Pavilions has been conducting unlawful surveillance of workers protesting over wages and hours. The union states in its press release, these unlawful practices undermine workers' rights and the ability to negotiate a fair contract and further intimidate and attempt to weaken the collective power of hardworking essential grocery workers throughout California. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. Jesse Nunez, a bail bondsman, was shot in the face on March 25th while attempting to find a wanted man at an abandoned building on West Lexington Avenue in El Cajon. Nunez and his partner from Fugitive Warrants called El Cajon police shortly before 4 p.m. to advise that they were checking the vacant building for a wanted fugitive. But things went afoul when a man who was not the fugitive sought confronted the agents with a gun. One of the agents fired a taser. The man then tackled Agent Nunez and began hitting him, then shot him in the face, Nunez told police. The second agent fired the taser again, enabling the agents to escape the building. Two El Cajon police officers drove a marked patrol vehicle onto the property to rescue the injured bail bond agent, says Lieutenant Will Guerin. The agent was transported to a hospital and released later that evening. Police set up a perimeter around the building and parked an armored vehicle outside the front door. Eventually, the suspected shooter and a second person came out of the building and surrendered. Both were taken into custody. The suspect had taser darts embedded in his upper torso, Lieutenant Guerin says. The sheriff's bomb arson unit sent in a tactical robot to clear the structure, and a sheriff's helicopter assisted in searching the area. Officers later searched the building and found evidence tied to the shooting. The suspected shooter, who had an active felony violation arrest warrant, was not the wanted felon sought by the bail bondsman, however. The wanted fugitive remains at large on charges that include drug dealing and possession of firearms. Lieutenant Guerin says that the squatters were occupying the building. Robert Gare, a photographer with East County Magazine, says he regularly walks past the building and has called police several times to report break-ins and apparent drug sales at the site, as well as a chemical odor. Gare says squatters breached the razor wire installed on fences, broke through a gate and a back door, also breaching windows and doors that had been welded over with metal plates. An investigation is continuing, and anyone with information on the shooting of Agent Nunez is asked to call the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311.
An autopsy of Dr. Sugata Das, The pilot, killed October 11th when his Cessna plane crashed into a Santee neighborhood, found no evidence of drugs, alcohol, or medications. Dr. Das had no history of serious medical conditions, nor was any evidence of suicide found. The medical examiner determined that his death was an accident. Dr. Das was a cardiologist at Yuma Regional Medical Center in Arizona, as well as an experienced pilot. He was traveling to Montgomery Field in San Diego when the flight ran into trouble amid cloudy weather conditions. An air traffic controller repeatedly warned Das that he was too low, urging him to climb in altitude. Instead, the plane crashed at the intersection of Jeremy and Greencastle, about 3 blocks east of Santana High School. UPS driver Steve Krueger was also killed when the plane struck his vehicle. 2 homes were destroyed by fire from the crash, displacing residents. A federal investigation into the crash continues, but for now, the cause remains a mystery. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
Housing discrimination is not always obvious or intentional, says Monica Lopez, a fair housing consultant at CSA San Diego Fair Housing. For example, she describes a situation faced by a young couple searching for their first home. They found a 2-bedroom house in a prime location within their budget and called the listing agent to schedule a tour. During the tour, the agent asked if the couple had children. They said they were looking forward to adopting, adding that the property would make an ideal family home. But the agent told them that the homeowners association was not family friendly since the site used to be a senior housing development and elderly residents would complain about noise. The agent also stated that the development's CC&Rs, or Covenants, Conditions, and Restrictions, still prohibit anyone under age 18 from living there. Such situations are all too common, Lopez says. Although the agent may have felt she was being helpful or considerate, her actions perpetuated the discriminatory conduct of the HOA. Under the Fair Housing Act, it is illegal to discriminate in renting or buying a home, obtaining a mortgage, seeking housing assistance, or engaging in other housing-related activities based on race, color, national origin, religion, or sex, including gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, and sexual harassment. Anyone harmed or facing future harm by a discriminatory housing practice can file a complaint against property owners, property managers, developers, real estate agents, mortgage lenders, homeowners associations, insurance providers, and others. You can file a complaint with the California State Department of Fair Employment and Housing, or with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, or with a local fair housing agency, such as the nonprofit CSA San Diego. You can reach CSA San Diego at the website c4sa.org, that is c4sa.org, or by calling 619-444-5700. Again, that's 619-444-5700. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Marie Johnson.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County.
One of the more controversial powers government agencies wield is eminent domain, the ability to acquire private property even without the owner's consent for a project determined to be the public's best interest. At the Santee City Council's meeting March 23rd, the board invoked the power to acquire slightly less than a tenth of an acre at its busiest intersection. The project will install a new right turning lane off northbound Cuyamaca Street onto Mission Gorge Road to relieve traffic congestion by taking land from a Chevron station. The property owner, Cons Workin Incorporated, refused to accept an earlier offer from the city to purchase the property, so the city council voted unanimously upon a motion made by Councilman Rob McNellis to take the land through eminent domain. The owner will be compensated at market rate, according to the city, which has declined to disclose the price. Bree Humphrey, Santee's marketing coordinator, said the city last invoked eminent domain on multiple properties in July 2013 to make street improvements on Prospect Avenue. The project will add a right turn lane along with sidewalk improvements, upgrades to an existing driveway, and improved drainage, the city staff report stated. The cost will be paid from existing developer contributions and traffic mitigation fees. In other action, the Santee City Council held the second reading and adoption of the city's new electoral district map. The city is required by the state to review its district map and make adjustments based on the results of the 2020 census. Santee held 4 public workshops on redistricting and made minor revisions to the map that divides the city of 60,000 into 4 districts, each with about 15,000 people. A key reason for the district election format is to ensure that minority populations have representation on elected boards, but in Santee's case, the voting age minority population makes up only 27% of the city's total and is evenly dispersed, making a majority minority district unfeasible according to the city. This year, 2 seats are up for re-election, Districts 1 and 2, represented by Councilman Rob McNellis and Deputy Mayor Ron Hall. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from Senior Gleaners. A group of seniors picking surplus fruit throughout the county needs help immediately to prevent fruit on hundreds of trees from going to waste. Margaret Burton, Board President of Senior Gleaners of San Diego County, says we have more requests for picking citrus trees than our current volunteer crews of seniors can handle. We need help to get the food to hungry families now before it falls off the trees and rots or gets put into the garbage, she says. Burton listed several reasons that volunteers age 55 and over have joined the group, such as getting outdoors, making new friends, keeping active, preventing food waste, and giving back to their communities. The group also needs people with vehicles that can haul several filled boxes of fruit in their own vehicle. Most deliveries are within 10 miles of the picking site. Most gleaners volunteer 3 to 4 hours just one day a week, but there are no required minimum commitments. Volunteers join crews working near where they live. Some volunteers form small groups that work independently and set their own schedules. To learn more about the nonprofit and to register as a volunteer, visit seniorgleanerssdco.org. Again, that's seniorgleaners, GLEANERSSDCO.org, or call 619-633-9180.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Marie Johnson with the People Power Report. When Jordan Russo and Matt Lurence met working at Chili's 14 years ago, they had no idea that they would eventually become close friends, roommates, and co-founders of an animal sanctuary in Campo. But after visiting animal sanctuaries in Los Angeles, they decided to open the nonprofit Farm Animal Rescue in Campo in 2016. Since then, the couple has had many successes, such as rescuing 111 pot-bellied pigs from a hoarding situation recently. The group helps relocate rescued animals to other sanctuaries and private homes when there are too many to house at their own facility. Pot-bellied pigs and roosters are the 2 agricultural animals most in need, according to Lurence. People often buy pot-bellied pigs after breeders misrepresent how large the animals will become, then end up with 150-pound pets for which they can't care. Similarly, people buy baby chicks thinking they will be hens and are unprepared for a loud rooster that typically is not allowed in their residential area due to noise, so they look to rehome them. In Campo, keeping roosters is not a problem. Russo and Lurence are fortunate to live and work at the sanctuary, though Russo also has a day job as a workers' compensation specialist. She works remotely, so she is able to assist with caring for the animals. Lurence used to work full-time as a bartender, but when he got laid off due to COVID, donations to the sanctuary made it possible for him to switch to spending his time working at the sanctuary, he told East County Magazine, although he does occasionally work shifts with her mobile vet. COVID also caused Russo and Lurence to transition from doing many in-person events, such as their annual open house every October, to providing virtual tours. They have recently resumed private tours that can be booked on their website, as well as hosting a public tour every month or two. The various species of rescues are kept in their own separate areas for safety's sake, with the exception of the Funky Bunch. That's a group of mostly elderly rescued animals with mobility issues, including several in specially designed wheelchairs. Their most recent rescue is a goat named Layla, who had been part of a 4-H breeding program and was scheduled to be slaughtered. After rescuing her, the couple discovered that Layla was pregnant. Her two babies, Betty and Sabrina, will live the rest of their lives safe with their mother at the sanctuary. In addition to around 90 farm animals that live permanently at Farm Animal Refuge and 9 pot-bellied pigs still waiting to be rehomed, Russo and Lawrence also have their own pet dogs and cats. For many visitors to the Farm Animal Rescue Sanctuary in Campo, it's their first time interacting with agricultural animals. Russo says pigs love belly rubs, cows play ball, goats love to cuddle, turkeys actually give hugs and purr. She added, once people get to experience that, they feel differently about farmed animals, and hopefully this leads to a compassionate lifestyle and diet. Both Russo and Lawrence have been vegan for over a decade and cite their love of animals as a reason for that choice and for opening Farm Animal Refuge. Farm Animal Refuge survives mainly off donations from private individuals, said Lawrence. The sanctuary does not receive any government funding because there isn't a lot available for farm animals. But Lawrence and Russo hope to get grants in the near future for educational programs such as virtual visits for schools. Russo's parents and sister help out at the sanctuary, along with dozens of volunteers who help with everything from caring for rescued livestock to fixing fences and building playgrounds for the animals. Anyone wanting to volunteer or make a donation can visit Farm Animal Refuge's website at farmanimalrefuge.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power.
President Joe Biden called for the removal of Russian President Vladimir Putin Saturday, but the White House later attempted to reframe and partially walk back the statement, telling multiple media outlets the president didn't endorse a regime change in Russia. The comment came as Biden was on the tail end of an emergency trip to Europe, where he met with NATO allies to discuss the war in Ukraine. The United Nations reports nearly 4 million refugees have fled Ukraine since late February, mostly to surrounding countries. Representative Jeff Fortenberry of Nebraska announced he's resigning. Fortenberry was just convicted of lying to the FBI about taking illegal campaign funds from a foreign billionaire. The Republican had lost support from a key ally, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy.
I think he had his day in court, and I think if he wants to appeal, he can go do that as a private citizen. But I think when someone's convicted, it's time to resign.
The New York Times reports Fortenberry could face 15 years in prison for 3 counts of misleading investigators. Pressure continues to mount on Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas after a recently released text between his wife Virginia Thomas and former Trump Chief of Staff Mark Meadows revealed she encouraged attempts to overturn the 2020 election. Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee are calling on Clarence Thomas to recuse himself from any cases involving that election. Speaking of the Supreme Court, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson has wrapped up her confirmation hearings before the Senate's Judiciary Committee. She's awaiting a likely final vote of approval from the committee on April 4th, after which her confirmation will go before the Senate. Alabama State Representative Wandalyn Gavon, president of the National Organization of Black Elected Legislative Women, says unfounded criticism of Jackson is likely to quickly fade in the light of a historic movement.
This is a day that we never thought would happen. This is a dream deferred that ultimately came true. We feel this is our moment in time, and you can't take away someone's moment in time.
More than 4 million people have signed on to an AARP petition urging Congress to lower the cost of prescription drugs. The request comes just a few months after pharmaceutical companies raised the cost of more than 800 prescriptions by about 5%. In a news conference last week, Wisconsin Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin pointed out that Americans pay, on average, 3 times more for the medicines than folks in other wealthy countries.
In 2020, 1 in 3 Americans saw their out-of-pocket medication costs increase. That has real consequences, and that needs to change.
More than 80% of respondents to a 2021 Kaiser Family Foundation poll indicated they'd support allowing the feds to negotiate prescription drug prices with pharma companies. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service, and Suzanne Potter contributed reporting. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The city of La Mesa is 110 years old this year, and we thought this would be a good time to replay our special production titled Centennial Spirits, Bringing History to Life, a production that was originally aired for the city's centennial in 2012.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. Today, we're bringing you something special, an original radio script titled Newsflash Spirits of the Centennial. The presentation commemorates the 100th anniversary of La Mesa, my hometown. Some things have changed a lot in the century since La Mesa became a city, and surprisingly, a lot of things are much the same. Taxes, border security, water shortages, women's rights, war, protesters occupying downtown. These are all recent headlines. And they were also issues back in 1911 and 1912, when La Mesa's dreams of cityhood began and citizens organized to make that dream come true. Now, as a news editor, I wondered what it was like to report the news back in those days. What was happening in La Mesa and our region? What were communications and transportation like? How tough was it to get news about major events nationally or around the world? Our journalism interns today find it mind-boggling to imagine digging out news stories with no internet, no smartphones, no Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. Back in 1911, when our story opens, La Mesa had a telegraph, and phone service had just recently arrived. Automobiles were recent inventions. But no highways had yet been built to Arizona or points to the east. The railway didn't connect through to the east yet either, though La Mesa did have a train station for folks heading to San Diego or points north. So news editors still relied largely on old-fashioned word of mouth and first-hand experiences to gather news. For our Centennial Spirits presentation, we start by conjuring up the spirit of La Mesa's first newspaper editor, Wiley Magruder. Now, for those who think developers owning the media is something invented by Doug Manchester and the UT San Diego, think again. Wiley's father, a real estate developer, helped start up the La Mesa Scout newspaper back in 1907 and put his 16-year-old son, Wiley, in charge. The publisher and printer was Wiley's 15-year-old friend, Henry Oliver, who also appears in our production. By 1911, as our story opens, young Wiley, at the ripe old age of 20, had a thriving readership in the little town that was then known as La Mesa Springs, writing glowing descriptions of real estate opportunities and the town's attractions. But times were changing, and Wiley soon found himself amid some major breaking news stories. I hope you'll enjoy our presentation of Centennial Spirits Newsflash, presented by the East County Magazine Players with help from the Kronos Theater Group. So without further ado, we begin our presentation with a dateline of January 1911 in the office of the La Mesa Scout, where editor Wiley Magruder is hard at work typing up today's top news story.
Dateline, January 1911. With good social organizations, no saloons, no gambling dens, this community offers one of the finest places in the world for a happy home. Morning, Henry. What's new?
Big news. Father and I just returned from a motor trip to San Diego. A fellow there, Glenn Hammond Curtis, has made the first successful flight with a contraption he calls a seaplane. Right off Coronado.
Seaplane? What's it do? Fly under sea?
No, but it can land on the water. And there's more. Curtis announced he's going to start up a flying school called North Island Aviation Camp. And he's inviting the Army and the Navy to send officers there for free pilot training.
Crank up the presses. The Navy coming to San Diego. Now that's a mighty interesting news. Say, do you think it will have much impact on our region's economy? Dateline, April 1911.
Attention, young man.
Yes, sir, Colonel Fletcher. How are things going in that artist colony you and Mr. Gross, the Broadway director, started up on the Grossmont Knoll?
Did you have to call my roadway to the top of the mountain Freaky Fletcher's Fancy Flight?
Just trying to sell newspapers, sir. Is it true you've got a famous opera?
Never mind, Madam Hank. There are 1,200 U.S. Army troops outside marching right down Lookout Avenue into the heart of La Mesa Springs.
What?
Go look outside and see for yourself.
gosh, there's a whole parade of officers. But why?
They're leading two infantry regiments armed with rifles and sidearms. They're here to protect East County from the rebel violence down in Mexico.
The Mexican Revolution. I heard some of the Mexican workers over at San Diego Consolidated Gas and Electric just headed off to join the revolutionaries.
The revolution started in Baja and it's spreading north. There's fighting in Tecate and even Tijuana. We can't risk that violence spreading across the border, so I arranged for those troops to come here and camp at Grossmont Pass, conduct some war games, and protect East County.
Good thing our town is in safe hands. Hats off to Colonel Ed Fletcher. Manuel, you look like you've been riding hard. Is something wrong out at the ranch in Steel Canyon?
See, there's trouble, but not at the ranch. Out on the railway. Mr. Steele, he wants me to tell you the news. The stagecoach driver coming from Yuma, he told us when he stopped to change his horse at the ranch. Heard it at the Campbell Stagecoach Station.
What happened?
One of the men working to build a rail line out in the Carrizo Gorge, he saw it all. Terrible.
Did those Mexican revolutionaries attack the rail line again?
Si, senor. Then they rounded up the work crew, took them all captive to fight with Pancho Villa, except one, who hid out in the rocks and got away. Gracias a Dios.
No wonder they're calling that line the Impossible Railway. Dateline, July
1911. Size is terrible.
Nice music, Madam Hank.
Guten Tag.
Fire! Fire! Where, Henry?
La Mesa Hotel at Lookout and Palm. The whole block of wooden buildings could go up.
Sorry, Mrs. Hank. Duty calls. I've got your fire to cover.
My, but it seems I have come at an inopportune time. Young man, Henry, the scout simply must write something about the exquisite buildings they're going to build in Balboa Park Canyon for the Panama California Exposition. Why, they remind me of the glorious opera houses of Europe.
Tell me more.
I traveled to San Diego to see the Paris Ballet. Shocking. Do you know their costumes bared their ankles?
Oh.
I visited a dear friend and attended the groundbreaking. We saw the drawings for Balboa Park. Yeah, magnificent. Spanish revival architecture. Though they say the buildings are only temporary. They won't last long.
Well, you're back. What happened?
Our volunteer firefighters are heroes. They hauled the chemical wagon out and held the fire to just the hotel's office.
Thank goodness.
Fire is, and always will be, the greatest threat to our region. Dateline, August 1911.
Look, it's Helen Dwan, the movie director. What a fancy motor car he's driving, all decked out in those leather driving goggles. He best be careful, though, to not get that dandy scarf caught in the wheel spokes.
Morning, Mr. Dwan. Congratulations. I hear that today's the big day you're opening up the Flying A movie studio down the street.
That we are, young man. We've got us a studio and a lot for shooting, and there are great places for filming on locations. Lakeside, Hakumba, all that wide-open countryside. Say, You should write something up on Bronco Billy here. He's one of our stars.
Howdy!
Yeehaw!
Pleased to meet you, Bronco.
Mr. Dwan, how did you get into making motion pictures?
Why, I had a desk job in Chicago. They sent me west to see why a film crew in Los Angeles hadn't sent any film for 2 weeks. Turns out their director was on a drunken bender. I recommended they disband, but the boss wired me back. Congratulations, you're the new director. So I moved the whole crew here.
What brings you here today?
Casting call. Can you put something in that newspaper of yours saying we need extras for a Western coming up? Can you get me some real cowboys?
Of course.
And some saloon girls? Got any of those?
Afraid not. Best try the Stingray in San Diego for those.
And a sweet, innocent-looking young lady to play a rancher's daughter who wins the heart of...
Like her? That sweet little lady who just sashayed in here?
Why, she has the face of an angel. Young lady, I can make you a star.
Are you the man making moving pictures like the one showing in the vaudeville theater down the street? I fear it shall become a den of vice.
Ooh, good thing these are silent pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Miss, I do not own the opera house, though I have had my eye on showing our motion pictures there.
Mr. Dwan's a movie director, ma'am. He's looking for some rising stars.
Oh, my, I see. Mr. Magruder, would you kindly post an ad for our upcoming Temperance Society meeting? It's high time we do something about the evils of the demon drink.
If it wasn't for demon drink, I wouldn't have a career.
Dateline, late August, 1911. Morning, Mr. Park. How's the lumber business and the banking business?
Booming. Now here's some news for you.
Yeah?
A group of local businessmen and concerned citizens have formed the La Mesa Improvement Club to promote La Mesa as a fine place to live and work.
Nice. Now that should be good for the real estate business.
We're making plans for La Mesa to become a city.
Incorporate? Why?
We can't count on a steady water supply from the flume nowadays.
That's right. San Diego Flume got taken back by its English owners, foreign control. But then Fletcher and Murray bought the whole shebang and renamed it Cuyamaca Water Company. Well, they promised to live up to the contract requirements and provide water to East County customers.
All true. But now they're talking about selling water to the city of San Diego. We can't risk losing local control of our water supply.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we were a city, we could start up our own municipal water department.
Wise move, seems to me.
That's why we're getting ready to start a petition to put it on the ballot.
Do you think it will succeed?
Ah, now there's the problem. Some of these old ranchers out there, they're opposed to the idea. Reverend Hugh Marshall, he's leading the opposition, doesn't want his citrus grove taxed. So we've got to figure some way to get us a few more votes. Got any ideas?
Dateline, September, 1911.
Here comes trouble. Helen Stoddard looks like she's on the warpath.
The Scout needs to publish this! We, the members of the La Mesa Women's Club, join with our sisters in the Women's Christian Temperance Union. We are embarking on a barnstorming tour to win voting rights for women. We're taking our suffragist special automobile tour into the most rural parts of East County. And we are calling on La Mesa City Fathers to pass a resolution urging our state legislator to enact suffrage rights for the ladies of our state.
Votes? Why, that would mean half of La Mesa's population who can't vote now could cast a ballot.
Women deserve a voice. Why, if women had the vote, we could stop child labor, pass liquor laws, regulate the railroads and these so-called public utilities that are ripping up our streets with their gas line installations.
Mrs. Stoddard, you've convinced me. In fact, we're going to publish an editorial. All power of government originates from the people. Direct legislation will be a check upon dishonesty, fraud, and trickery in the legislature. The right of women to vote is as absolute as a man. Dateline, October 1911.
So, any word, Mr. Magruder, about the election?
It's official, Mrs. Stoddard. The news is just in from California's Secretary of State. It was a close race. Took 2 days to count all the ballots and certify them. By a 1,000-vote margin, the men of California have granted women the right to vote.
Yes! Thank you, young man, for that courageous editorial. No doubt it helped persuade our La Mesa's civic leaders to support suffrage for women. I am so proud to live in such a progressive-minded town.
What do you have planned next?
Why, we're organizing a caravan. I have 40 members of the La Mesa Women's Club committed to join me in a journey to the county clerk's office to register to vote on October 19th. Why, just think. Now women can not only vote, we can run for office too. I hereby announce my candidacy for the U.S. Senate. In fact, I may even run for president someday. Why, I'm sure it won't be long until the American people elect a woman to serve in the White House.
What Pandora's box have I opened? Dateline, November 1911. We're here at a town meeting at the Opera House, where supporters and opponents of La Mesa declaring cityhood are circulating petitions for and against. And leading the supporters is Mr. Charles Parkman.
Are you ready for La Mesa to determine our own destiny?
Yes! All right!
Are you ready to help La Mesa have the power to provide its own water supply?
Yes!
Govern our own schools that are overcrowded.
Yes. Yes.
So our children can have a proper public education.
Yes! Good!
And on the other side, we have the Reverend Hugh Marshall working to rally his forces.
No new taxes!
No new taxes!
No new taxes!
No new taxes!
No big government!
No big government!
No big government!
We don't need cityhood for La Mesa!
Dateline, January 1912.
Morning, Mr. Magruder. I need to run an ad to find a new boarder in our boarding house.
Pleased to oblige, Mrs. Fellows, and I surely did enjoy that Christmas dinner you served up worth every penny of the 25 cents it cost.
Oh, thank you. Let's see what's in your newspaper here. My, cooking with gas costs $1.85 a month. I ought to look into buying one of those newfangled gas stoves. Now then, what's the latest on this move to make La Mesa City?
Well, that first petition didn't work out. Supporters got 70 signatures, including 20 women folk who exercised their new right to vote.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
But they forgot to publish their announcement, as the law requires. Oh. So last month, the county district attorney declared it null and void. Oh. Now, however, they've resubmitted their petition, this time with 97 signatures. Huh. The county board of supervisors is meeting today. Reckon we'll hear soon.
Oh.
Recruiter here. Yahoo! Today is a historic day for La Mesa. Supervisors have approved a citizens' incorporation petition and set February 7th as a special election day.
All right!
Dateline, February 1912. Well, Henry, it's official. With 249 votes in favor and only 60 votes against, La Mesa has approved incorporation.
That's great news.
Today, 1 week after that historic election, city trustees have gathered together and elected Dr. Charles Sampson as the first mayor to preside over our fair city.
Dr. Sampson? Bet the good doctor was opposed to cityhood.
True, my friend, but politics make strange bedfellows. Dateline, March 1912. This week's national headlines. The U.S. Post Office has issued the first airmail postage stamp, 9 years after the first aeroplane lifted off at Kitty Hawk. illusionist Harry Houdini made a miraculous escape from a water tank in New York Harbor. Former President Theodore Teddy Roosevelt has formed a new Bull Moose political party in hopes of taking back the White House.
Oh, can I help you, Colonel Fletcher?
I just came back from San Diego. Went there to pick up some more trees to plant up at Grossmont Colony. You won't believe what's happening downtown. Those labor agitators, the Wobblies.
International Workers of the World, IWW.
Anarchists and socialists. About 5,000 of them. Why, they're occupying the streets of downtown.
Unbelievable. What do they want?
They're protesting the city's new free speech ordinance, which actually outlaws speeches in public places around City Hall, though it clearly hasn't worked. The leader of the anarchists herself, Emma Goldman, showed up and gave a radical speech. Radical. I'm telling you, why, she not only demanded more rights for workers, she was openly advocating to legalize birth control for women.
Scandalous! Then what happened?
It got ugly. Some of the fine upstanding citizens of San Diego abducted Miss Goldman's paramour, Ben Reitman, tarred and feathered that scoundrel and branded IWW on his bare backside.
Oh, ouch, that must have hurt.
The anarchists fought back, and there was an all-out riot. Police used fire hoses on the rioters, and now the protesters are complaining about police brutality.
Thanks for the tip, Colonel Fletcher. Let's hope nothing like that ever happens in San Diego again.
Dateline, April 1912. The past of La Mesa has laid a strong foundation for the future.
Madam Schumann-Heink, what's wrong?
Mein Gott, have you heard?
What's happened?
I just came from the telegraph office. A terrible tragedy. The British ocean liner, the Titanic, struck an iceberg and has sunk.
Oh, my.
My dear companion, Lady Astor, was on board along with her husband.
Oh.
I must learn their fates.
That's terrible.
I'll call.
Wiley, you said it would be my turn to cover the next big story. I'll call New York on your new telephone.
Operator.
New York Times.
News desk.
May I speak with the reporter, please, miss?
Sir, I am a reporter.
Women in the newsroom? My times are changing. Henry Oliver here, a reporter in California. Any word on survivors of the Titanic disaster?
Oh, it was a terrible story. There are 1,500 believed lost, out of over 2,200 on board.
Any names? What about the Astors?
Oh, and the Astors, oh, they acted quite nobly. Lady Astor was on deck, just 19 and expecting with child. A witness saw Lady Astor give up her shawl to wrap around an immigrant's baby in the icy cold night. The child, tossed into a lifeboat, was caught by a woman below and survived.
Did Mrs. Astor survive? What about her husband?
Oh, and Mr. Astor? He ordered a servant to fetch Madeline's fur coat and had her wear her finest jewels. Oh, then he lifted her onto a lifeboat. The sea is calm and you will be all right, he assured her. You are in good hands and I will meet you in the morning.
Oh.
But he never saw the dawn.
Oh, that's dreadful news.
He was a hero to the end. He helped two frightened immigrant children onto the lifeboats, then went to the ship's kennel to free the dogs. The last that Lady Astor saw of him, he was strolling across the deck with his beloved Airedale dog, Kitty, at his side.
And Mrs. Astor?
Her health was frail. She had a nurse on board. Yet she mustered her strength on the lifeboat, rowing and bailing out water. Why, she even helped to pull drowning men from the water, saving lives.
My God.
So she survived. What a remarkable woman.
Oh, and there's more big news this week. Arizona and New Mexico have been admitted to the Union. The first woman flew solo across the English Channel, and some British explorers just reached the South Pole. How's that?
Amazing. Thank you for sharing those news flashes. One thing about a tragedy like this, it should mean a safety overhaul for the industry. Why, I'll bet we'll never again see the day when a major ship goes down without enough lifeboats for all. Madam Schumann-Heinck, please accept my condolences on your loss. Say, isn't that the song they were playing when the Titanic was sinking? You should record that. I'll bet it would be a big hit.
Dateline, October 1912.
So, Wiley, how are you liking the book you're reading, Riders of the Purple Sage? Well, would you look at that? Our own Western writer, Owen Lister, just walked in. I'm going over to the telegraph office to see what's new.
Morning, Mr. Lister.
How do you fellas like that new Western writer, Zane Grey?
Well, he spins a fine tale, Mr. Lister, but then so do you. The Virginian you wrote is still my favorite. How's that new home you're building up the Grossmont Colony coming along?
Mighty fine. Say, do you have any news on how the Bull Moose campaign's shaping up for my good friend Teddy Roosevelt? Sounds like quite a matchup with Taft and Woodrow Wilson both in the race.
The former president is a friend of yours? How do you know him?
Oh, we go way back. Used to go camping together up in Yosemite, along with a fellow by the name of John Muir. Heard he's writing a book, too.
Stop the presses! Just came over the wire down at the telegraph office. Teddy Roosevelt has been shot.
Shot?
In Milwaukee. And wait till you hear what happened. He was outside the hotel because of his big speech when a saloon keeper ran up with a gun and shot him right in the chest. Roosevelt looked dazed, patted his breast pocket, then ascended onto the platform where he unbuttoned his overcoat and vest to reveal a blood-stained shirt. He pulls out a bloody stained, folded-up paper. Not even a bullet could stop the Bull Moose, who went on to begin his speech.
Give me
and
that.
He said,
I don't know the man who shot me tonight. He shot to kill me. Now I wish to say seriously to the speakers and newspapers representing the Republicans and Democratic and Socialist parties that they cannot, month in and month out, make the kind of slanderous, bitter, and malevolent assaults that they have made, and not expect that brutal and violent characters will be unaffected by it. Don't you pity me. I'm all right. And you cannot escape listening to my speech either. I ask you to look at our declaration and read our platform about social and industrial justice, and then, friends, vote for the progressive ticket!
So after his speech, they took him to the hospital, where the doctor said it was only a flesh wound. Good thing his eyesight was so poor. He had to write his speech in big print and use lots of paper.
Dateline, November 1912. Months without rain has worsened the drought, adding to the woes facing East County cattle ranchers. Mexican fever has stricken herds south of the border, leading local cattlemen to build a border fence to keep out those invaders from the south, cows and bulls.
Is it true you run classified ads in this here paper?
Yes, ma'am, we do.
Sugar, I need to find me some work.
What line of work are you in, Miss...
Delilah. I reckon you can say I specialize in services for gentlemen.
Oh.
Need a room to rent, too. You got any boarding houses in this little town?
Mary Fellows runs one, but I don't think it's the kind of place you're looking for.
Oh, dear.
Oh, why, Mrs. Stoddard, what brings you here today?
What's that fallen woman doing here?
The name's Delilah, ma'am.
She's one of those sporting women who were rounded up by San Diego police when they raided the Stingaree District last night. It was quite a scandal. Some of San Diego's most upstanding city officials were among the clientele.
Definitely upstanding.
Oh, for goodness sake, I hear they caught the chief of police and the mayor in compromising positions.
Oh, what's your source, Mrs. Stoddard?
Our temperance ladies have been active participants on the city's vice suppression committee. The police arrested 138 of these women last night, gave them the choice to accept help from our group to reform or leave town. 137 of them hightailed it out of here, presumably back to their lives of sin.
How many men were arrested?
None.
Now, Miss Delilah, go on, get out of here. We have no houses of ill repute or saloons in La Mesa. Go try alcohol.
Thank you kindly. You ever need some help getting to the bottom of a story, Mr. News Editor, you come and see me.
Dateline, November 12th, 1912. Howdy, boys. Taking a break from working your claims out at the Chase Mine?
Tarnation! Can you believe what just happened in El Cajon?
Oh, what happened?
They voted to incorporate.
El Cajon, a city too?
They done made it illegal to own hogs or cattle in the city limits.
Oh, how awful.
And now first thing they done is to legislate morality.
How?
They banned horse racing down Main Street.
At least it'll be cleaner.
And now they're fixing to outlaw drinking liquor.
Now, wait a minute. That's going too far.
Where's a hard-working man supposed to wet his whistle when they close down all the saloons?
What is East County coming to?
This concludes our special production of Centennial Spirits. We thank the members of the East County Magazine Players, including representatives from Kronos Theater Group and the Faultline Players, our talented cast, Ted Faligan, Celeste Innocente, Raina Menashe, Eric George Tauber, Jackie Tauber, Leon Thompson, and Jeff Thurman. We also acknowledge music and sound effects from the U.S. Army Band, PDMusic.org, Sound Bible, Wildcat, Foley, Soundlay, and Burke. The script for Centennial Spirits was written by Miriam Raftery, directed by Raina Menashe, and produced by the East County Magazine Show and our parent nonprofit, the Heartland Coalition, on KNSJ Radio, 89.1 FM, Descanso. We also gratefully acknowledge our studio host, the San Diego Performance Academy. If you would like to underwrite future dramatic interpretations of East County history by the East County Magazine Players, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call us at 619-698-7617. We hope you've enjoyed this special production of Centennial Spirits. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.